It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Travel writer and photographer Gail Harper has traveled the world on assignment, but when she learned that it takes a raindrop 90 days to travel from the headwaters of the Mississippi River to the Gulf of Mexico, she decided that she needed to take that journey herself, even if no one was going to hire her to do it. The result is the book Road Trip with a Raindrop, 90 Days Along the Mississippi. This hour, I'll talk with Gail Harper about her long, slow journey. And later in the hour, Scott Gritters and Brian Button of the Iowa Department of Natural Resources will be here as well. First, we'll start with Gail. Hello, Gail.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And in your book, you write about the connection that you made with the Mississippi River very early in your life. You remember the very first time you saw the river. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I remember it very well. I was 9 years old, and I was in the back seat of my family's DeSoto, and my dad said, "Get up, kids, and look out the window. We're going to cross the Mississippi River." And it literally stopped my heart. I felt some kind of a very powerful connection with it, and it just took my breath away. And ever since then, I have always known that somehow or other, my story was going to be connected with the Mississippi River's story.
Did you live anywhere near the river when you were a child?
No, I didn't. I live in the Ozarks now in Springfield, Missouri, and I've lived in various other places. And I've never lived near the river, but every time I have had an opportunity to be near it, I have felt that old connection. And so when the idea came that, when I learned actually the fact about it takes a raindrop 90 days to travel the entire river from the headwaters to the Gulf, this whole project seemed to be fully formed in that second. And I knew right then that this is what I was going to do, that I was going to make a 90-day road trip, that I would follow the whole river, and that I would keep pace with an imaginary raindrop that I would call serendipity.
When that idea sprang from your mind fully formed, I mean, that's a big time commitment, especially for someone who works on assignment. How did you think you would manage to carve out that much time? And did you try to pitch the idea to people who might pay you to do it?
No, I didn't. From that moment, actually, it has pretty much had a life of its own, and it has created itself, and I've just been along for the ride. And the very first thing that appeared was, okay, if I'm going to do this, how in the world am I going to pay for that much lodging? I can't afford 90 nights of lodging. So I sent an email to Chambers of Commerce and Visitors Bureaus all along the river, sent them a link to my website so they could see my work, and I said, this is the project that I have in mind, and if you are interested in having me stop in your community and you can help me with lodging, let me know. And I had no idea what to expect, but what did happen was that I actually ended up with more invitations than I had available nights.
Really?
Really. And so which made it possible, but it also added a dimension to this journey that I could never have imagined, because in the process of making those arrangements, they would often ask me what my preferences were, and my answer was always just a clean bed, please, and hopefully internet access, and beyond that, whatever you choose will be perfect. And so the result of that was that they would often put me up in places that were unique to the heritage and culture of that community. So I stayed in places from a tugboat converted to a B&B, a sharecropper's cabin, the master suite in a plantation mansion. In one place, they actually handed me the keys to a 30-room mansion and said, "This is yours for the weekend. Just leave the keys in the box when you go."
Now, as you were planning this journey, and again, you knew it was going to take you 90 days, mm-hmm. How did you break down the trip? Because you would be traveling at such a low speed for you.
Well, what I did was I divided the river miles into 90 pieces and marked that off. And then I tried to stay two nights in each location. And my journey was, I mean, the river travels 2,400 miles approximately from headwaters to Gulf. I drove about 7,400 because my route was up, over, around, back and forth. I actually have the world's worst sense of direction. And so I never knew where I was during the day. I just followed whatever road seemed to beckon and went where somebody suggested I might want to go and just wandered up and down and back and forth. And then at the end of the day, I would turn on my GPS and it would take me to where I was going to sleep for the night.
So, of course, you had to start up at the headwaters at Lake Itasca. What time of year did you start?
I started in August, and I ended 2 days before Thanksgiving down at the Gulf of Mexico.
Did you pick that time of year for any reason?
Yes, I did. You know, it was beautiful weather for the most part, other than I had a couple of weeks of nonstop rain.
Right, and some flooding on the river.
Yeah. But for the most part, it was beautiful weather, and I was catching, the late summer and early fall as I went south, and so it was no accident that I chose that time.
Let's talk about your first day up there at the headwaters, and the experience that so many people have had when they visit the headwaters of the Mississippi, of actually walking across the river.
Mm-hmm. It is an amazing thing to see, actually. The Mississippi springs out of the side of Lake Itasca, which is a pristine little lake in the far north woods of Minnesota. And it just literally bubbles right out of the side of it. And there are some rocks that were placed there many years ago by the Civilian Conservation Corps. And that's where people kind of make their way across the river. You don't exactly walk, but you kind of clamber across the rocks to cross the river. And then it narrows down into a very, like 10 feet wide, 12 feet wide stream. And I was actually able to canoe it there. One of the first river friends that I met on the journey invited me to go out on his canoe, and when we paddled it there, the river was so tiny that you could touch both sides with the canoe paddle.
It's interesting. You got that kind of a response from all of these chambers of Congress, or chambers of commerce is what I'm trying to say, chambers of commerce inviting you to stay in their towns. And of course, I'm sure they all hoped that you'd have a wonderful experience and take beautiful pictures and write about their towns. But you met so many people along the way who really had no way to benefit from helping you. But your journey just really seemed to capture their imagination. And Terry, the man who took you out in his canoe, was one of those people.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely was. There was nothing planned other than where I would sleep at night, and that was by design, because I really just wanted to let every day unfold as serendipity saw fit. And so I just met people everywhere. I met them in cafes or on their porches or, while we were stopped for road construction or anywhere, everywhere. And, a conversation would start up and they would ask what I was up to and I would explain the project. And they would say, oh, well, you must meet so-and-so. Or they would take me home to meet someone or invite me home to dinner or, make some connection and make some opportunity happen that I could never have scripted and never have imagined. And it did. People just wanted to be a part of it. They wanted to share in it. And so they opened their hearts and their lives, and they told me their stories. And it really, they are the soul of this journey.
You stopped early on in the journey at the Leech Lake Reservation near the Ojibwe community of Inger, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. You went to a powwow. And as part of this experience, you were somewhat taken off guard by one of the people there saying, when you come asking for something like information, it's traditional for you to bring something in exchange. And I'm curious, I'm sure that was an uncomfortable moment for you. But normally, as a travel writer and photographer, I'm guessing you probably do a lot of research before you go to places. Did that moment give you pause and make you think, oh, maybe I'm not ready for this?
Well, every day was so filled with surprises that it would not have been possible to be ready for everything. I didn't know I was going to go to that powwow. It just appeared. And I didn't know much about the Ojibwe culture. And so I didn't really expect myself to know the ways of that culture and that would be expected. It was a very uncomfortable moment, and I just kind of, you know, did the best I could. As I said in the story in the book, it's like I did a mental inventory of what I had, and it was, you know, nothing but camera gear and a fairly stale energy bar. And, you know, so I just said, I'm sorry, I didn't know. And I just kind of waited to see what happened. And he went on and spoke to me about his culture. And as we talked, I felt that sort of stiffness and coldness just slide away. And we ended up having a very warm, very memorable conversation. And one of the cool things about this journey is, I don't know if you've had a chance to read, but when I got down to Greenville, Mississippi, I actually met a man of the Homus tribe there. And we sat and had a conversation. And after I had met with this Ojibwe man, I went shopping the next morning and made sure that I had some tobacco in my car just in case anything happened again. And when I met this man in Mississippi, after we sat and talked for a few minutes, I remembered that I had this tobacco, and I asked him, I told him the story and asked him if I could give it to him. And he was as honored to receive it as I was to give it, and it felt like this beautiful big circle had been completed.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with travel writer and photographer Gail Harper. She's just published the book Road Trip with a Raindrop, 90 Days Along the Mississippi River. We're talking about her journey. In a little while, Scott Gritters and Brian Button of the Iowa Department of Natural Resources will also join us. And we want to hear from you. What are your favorite ways to enjoy the Mississippi River? What place does this river hold in your heart or in your life? 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'm talking with travel writer and photographer Gail Harper. She has just published the book Road Trip with a Raindrop, 90 Days Along the Mississippi River, a journey that was inspired by the fact that it takes a raindrop that falls into the headwaters of the Mississippi River 90 days to reach the Gulf of Mexico. And you write quite a lot about the history of the river and the role that it has played in the lives of the people who live along the river. But there was something that you learned on this journey. There were many things that surprised you on this journey. But when you were still up in Minnesota, you learned about how basically all of the trees of this region were clear cut as the lumber barons made their fortunes off of these natural resources. What about that story surprised you?
Well, I had not known any of that at all until I arrived in that area. And it was surprising on many levels that a, you know, pristine ancient forest that had lived and thrived for so many centuries could be completely decimated in that short space of time, which was, I think, about 70 years, and it was basically gone. And what was left behind from the clear-cutting methods was a tinderbox, because they only took the marketable trunks and the rest was left to dry on the land. And so it was very susceptible to wildfires, and there were many of those. And so it was shocking, actually, to realize how much destruction can be caused by human beings in such a short time. It was also, I have to say, comforting and a little bit inspiring to read and learn that we did learn from that experience, and we can't get back the old growth forest, but there are now good procedures in place to manage those resources.
I think it's a fact that a lot of people learn not necessarily in childhood when we're looking at history, but later in life. It's something I learned about as an adult, and it shocked me because, of course, going up north is something that we do to escape into the wilderness. And to know that all of that wilderness was replanted in the early part of the 20th century is pretty shocking. But speaking of those lumber barons, that was also the moment that you got handed the keys to an entire mansion. Tell me about that.
Well, the way it unfolded, as I said, I was invited to stay places. And so I was busy making these arrangements. And when the invitation came to stay at what's called Linden there at Little Falls, Minnesota, I just said, yes, thank you very much, and had a quick look at the website. And I assumed it was a B&B and went on about my business. And so when I arrived there are two mansions there, a green one and a white one, side by side. And the docent was giving me a tour through the green mansion, and in the course of that said, you know, you'll find the pots and pans here, and you can cook your meals, and, you know, you can read all the books in the library. And I was confused. And I
Why are you telling me all of this?
Yeah. And so I said, you know, are there other guests here? And she said, oh, no. And I said, is this a B&B? And she said, no, this house is only used for special events and weddings. And since it happens to be Labor Day weekend, we're all going to be leaving very soon. And so here are the keys. Just enjoy yourself for the weekend. And it was huge. It was a 30-room mansion.
You did ask if it was haunted.
I did. That was my first question, and it was not. It was very friendly and safe feeling, and I felt no other presence at all. And it was beautiful. It's right on the banks of the river, and it was actually a wonderful experience.
Now, as you were traveling around or traveling down the first part of the river in Minnesota, you were in Minnesota for pretty much, you know, that part of the journey. Now, as you get further down the river, you have to make some choices between Wisconsin and Minnesota and Wisconsin and Iowa and Illinois. And so as you were traveling down, how did you decide which side of the river you were going to be on?
Well, I didn't actually ever decide anything, Charity. It was always just surrendering to serendipity and seeing what drew me next. And, you know, sometimes it would be the pretty light. Sometimes it would be, oh, here's a bridge, I'll take it. You know, sometimes it would be someone telling me, oh, you ought to stop and see such and such, or I have a friend here you might want to meet. And so there was no plan at all, other, as I said, than where I was going to sleep. And so I might hop back and forth across the river, you know, three or four times in the space of a short distance, or I might just follow it down one side. There was actually no plan at all, ever.
You ended up visiting a convent that is near the river, and that was another one of those moments of serendipity where you hadn't decided that you were going there. I don't know that you knew anything about it before you got there. Did you?
The only thing I knew was that they baked bread, and I had heard that their bread was wonderful, and that was not why I went there. I, as you said, had really didn't know. I pulled off at an overlook, and I just watched, watched some eagles coming up from the river and just watched the river, and when I pulled back onto the highway, I found myself turning back north instead of south, and you know, I learned pretty quickly on this journey not to argue with that. And so I just went, and then it became clear, okay, I'm going to Sinsinawa, Wisconsin. And I didn't know why. And there is a convent there, and I just walked around the grounds, and there was a cemetery, and I was walking the cemetery and just reading some of the headstones and just kind of wondering about the lives of these sisters. And there was a labyrinth there, and so I walked it. And that's a very peaceful, centering experience. And so I thought, okay, this must be why I came. And I headed back.
You are not Catholic, right?
No, I'm not. No.
I think that's important to know in the story, because this was, you weren't really on a spiritual journey. You weren't looking for something from this convent or church, but you had such a powerful experience there.
I did. So I walked back to my car, started to get in my car, and I heard this little voice say, "Come over here and help me, would you?" And so I turned around, and there's this little gray-haired nun, and she says, "This bench has blown over in the wind, and we must set it upright." And so we did, and then we sat on it and just had a wonderful conversation. She was just delightful. And after we'd talked for a while, she said, "You know, Gail, today is my birthday, and this time with you and this postcard that you have just given me is my birthday gift." And so then it was clear to me that I had come there to help a friend celebrate her birthday.
In just a moment, we're going to welcome our other guests to the show. But before we get to that, I want to enter Iowa with you. You went to Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, and also to Guttenberg, Iowa. And Captain Jack took you on a journey. Captain Jack Libby, who's the owner of Mississippi Explorer Cruises. And we mentioned the rain that you had been experiencing. The river was swollen. There was a lot of rain. You probably didn't think you were going to get an opportunity to explore the river in this way. Can you tell me about the journey you took with Captain Jack?
Yes, it was wonderful, actually. It had been, I don't know, at least a week or 10 days or more of just nonstop rain. And I had thought that I was going to take a cruise on the Mississippi Explorer Cruises there, which goes on the backwater, but the high water and the rain had canceled that idea. So I was just kind of sitting beside the river, and my cell phone rang, and it was Captain Jack, who owned Mississippi Explorer Cruises, and he and his wife Dixie were going to go into some of the backwaters in the Upper Mississippi River National Wildlife Refuge, and he invited me to go along, and it was a wonderful experience. I mean, his knowledge and appreciation of this area, and he had been a barge captain for many years, and he had such a deep love and so much knowledge about the river and the wildlife there that it was truly a wonderful experience seeing it through his eyes.
I'm talking with Gail Harper. She's a travel writer and photographer, and she's just published the book Road Trip with a Raindrop, 90 Days Along the Mississippi River. And as her journey entered Iowa, I think it's a perfect time to bring into the conversation Scott Gritters. He's a fisheries biologist at the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. Hello, Scott.
Hello, Charity. How are you doing this morning?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today.
No, thank you.
And Brian Button is also here. He's editor-in-chief for Iowa Outdoors Magazine. Hello, Brian.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you for being here today.
And, great. Thank you.
Scott, we were just talking about some of the opportunities that Gail had to explore the nature of the Mississippi River. I think we focus a lot on river towns in Iowa when we think about tourism along the Mississippi River. But I know that you have also invested a lot of time, 20 years along the river, into the wilderness experience of the river. For you, what do you think the best way to really experience the river is?
Well, exactly. You know, I think you hit on the point. You know, it is a wilderness area. It is a wilderness area to a lot of Iowans and folks along the river. I think the way Charity or way Gail experienced the river is a great way to do it. Just go where the water takes you. Live with the river. Experience Iowa towns and the refuge area. I think she hit it on the head. Take it, you know, as it comes to you.
Now, I know that a lot of people love to get out on the river, and, you know, if you spend any time along the shore, you see a lot of people out in speedboats, just really enjoying the water and the sunshine if you're there that time of year. Yep. But, you know, this is a river that has been so incredibly altered by humans that some of the stretches, particularly the ones along Iowa River towns, are pretty sterile. Where do you go to really experience what maybe the river would have been like before we altered it?
Well, you know, I don't ever consider any of the river towns sterile. I think they're all pretty fascinating. But, you know, when you look at the natural hydrology of the river, it has been altered. We've put, in Iowa's reach, at least, we have 11 lock and dams. I think there's 29 up and down the river. And but you can get a sense of what the river was really like if you look at the upper parts of the pools. You know, for instance, when you were at Guttenberg, when you look at the town, you know, from Guttenberg and the first part of the river downstream, that's a lot like the historical Mississippi looked like. And, you know, a lot of people think of the river as different things, but as Gail pointed out, you know, we have a channel where most of the barge traffic is, but we also have this myriad of backwaters and sloughs and lakes that just really make the upper Mississippi River very unique. And it is experienced by a lot of people, even though it is altered. I mean, it gets more visitors to the upper Mississippi River than places like Yellowstone National Park. So it is a true resource.
Now, of course, you are a fish biologist, and a lot of people spend a lot of time on the river fishing, but you also have made a study of river otters.
I haven't done river otters. I've done a lot with mussels and fish along the Mississippi River, tracking fish, movements, and just studying the biodiversity that is just incredible along the Mississippi River. And, you know, I spend a lot of time fishing it. Just a tremendous resource for fishing. Each pool has 100 species of fish. You just never know what you're going to catch. Just a great place to be.
Brian, you write a lot about the Mississippi River in Iowa Outdoors. What are some of your favorite ways to enjoy the river in Iowa?
Well, you know, it's such a unique place in Iowa, and we've been talking about just the river, but really it's a nexus of so many things going on and meeting at this one location. It's the Paleozoic Plateau. It's this 500 million year old rock outcroppings that escaped a lot of the more recent glaciation. It's these deeply carved, eroded hills and dales and valleys, and the roads aren't straight, and you're going to get lost, and it's the hardwood forests, and it's a place that screams color in the fall. It's the history. This is literally where the first white people saw Iowa when in 1673, Marquette and Joliet coming down the Wisconsin River, and that is the first white people to see the Mississippi and to see Iowa. And you can go to this very place at Pikes Peak State Park on this 500-foot bluff and look out over this expansive valley and see the Wisconsin River coming in. And this is the spot in 1805 that Zebulon Pike was sent into the frontier to establish a fort, which was established upriver at Prairie du Chien. It's the thousands and thousands and thousands of years of Native American cultural history there, the mounds, the mound building, the concentration of mounds in this three-state area is the densest concentration on Earth. It's the architecture, the stone, the limestone architecture, these old, beautiful, wondrous river towns. It's the wildlife watching. It's the people. It's the antique shops and the little eateries. And it's nature on display that brings people there. And there's also this history. And there's really no other place on the entire Mississippi River that has all of these things at this location. The bluffs around Marquette McGregor from Effigy Mounds down towards Dubuque are some of the most impressive along the whole river. And it's for these reasons that when you go up there, especially in the fall, you see license plates in the parking lots at the state parks from Louisiana and Kentucky and Virginia and Colorado. And it's really a remarkable place. And it offers so many things to so many people, from anglers, bird watchers that go up there to watch the nearly 300 species of birds, people that love to trout fish. It's a place unlike any other in Iowa. No other place in Iowa has the geology, setting the tone like Northeast Iowa does, and the springs and the cold, clear waters, and it's just a remarkable, remarkable place that really everybody, every Iowan, needs to go there. And I have gone there numerous times after having my eyes calibrated from national parks in the west, and had gone back to Northeast Iowa just a few days afterwards, and it's still, compared to all of those other places, those national parks out west, it still is a stunning place to me, and it's worthy of everybody's attention.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about the Mississippi River in Iowa and Gail Harper's journey along the entire Mississippi River. She wrote about it in her new book, A Road Trip with a Raindrop, 90 Days Along the Mississippi. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the Mississippi River. With me is travel writer and photographer Gail Harper. She has just published the book Road Trip with a Raindrop, 90 Days Along the Mississippi. And right now, we're focusing specifically on the Mississippi in Iowa. With me is Scott Gritters. He's a fisheries biologist with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. And Brian Button, editor-in-chief for Iowa Outdoors Magazine. You are welcome to join our conversation as well at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. What's your favorite way to enjoy the Mississippi River? And Gail, since Brian was speaking so eloquently of the Driftless region in Iowa and Wisconsin, you wrote about that region, and the terrain is really incredible in that area. And then there's this incredible shift as you reach the land where the glaciers did reach, right?
Right, absolutely. It is. I did appreciate very much what Brian was saying about that, and it is a spectacular area where the glaciers did not fill in the river valley as it did in other places. And so the bluffs and the cliffs along the river are truly spectacular. And yes, when I was traveling south from there, it did absolutely just feel like I was dropped down out of that with a thump into flat lands of cornfields, because it seemed to end very suddenly. And so, you know, as I traveled the river all the way from north to south, that was one of the always present aspects of this journey, is how the geology and the geography changed as I traveled. Of course, everything changed, the cultures and the accents and the foods and the agriculture and everything.
I want to go to the phones. Tim is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Tim.
Yes.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Well, I was wondering if your writer had stumbled across or discovered the story behind the naming of Mount Hosmer in Lansing, Iowa, because I always found that to be one of the most fascinating tidbits of kind of the history of the population along the river.
Well, why don't you tell it to us briefly?
I believe it was Harriet Hosmer in 1850 that had gotten off the steamboat in Lansing, and the young men of the steamboat were preparing to race to the top of this peak beyond Lansing, and the young lady who had been brought up to be physically active by her father, who was wanting to kind of inoculate her against tuberculosis and other conditions of the time, actually had won the race, and the steamboat captains, you know, suggested they name the peak after the young lady, who went on to be a quite renowned artist of the era. But the fascinating fact to me was that she'd spent less than 2 hours in the state and got a landmass named after her, and I just I've always found that a kind of a fascinating story.
That is a great story. And Gail, I don't think your journey took you to Mount Hosmer, but Brian or Scott, do either one of you want to weigh in on that?
I have been to Mount Hosmer, and actually the thing that inspired me to visit was an article that the caller, Tim Lane, had in our magazine, actually. He's a regular contributor to Iowa Outdoors Magazine. And it's a beautiful scenic overlook, and Lansing is an interesting and wonderful town, a great place to visit along the river. And Tim, didn't they have a foot race up to the top? I don't know if Tim is still on the line.
That's what he just said. But you're talking about in modern times? Or
no, this was back in the 1800s.
Yeah, he just told that story.
Yes, and it's just a fascinating place to visit. And, you know, once again, it's Lansing is a gem along the river, and the thing that really makes Lansing neat is that Pool 9 on the Mississippi, on the Upper Mississippi River National Wildlife Refuge. And if you get a map, a river map there from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and it shows all of these sloughs and bayous, and it's just a place to go get lost. And people have begun to go up and do a lot of paddling up there with kayaks and camping overnight on sandbars. And it's really the boundary waters of Iowa. It's just a dense concentration of interconnected, interwoven sloughs, and the main channel is clear off on the east side, over on the Wisconsin side, and so on the Iowa side, it's just a remarkable, wonderful place to visit.
Tim, thanks a lot for your call. Mark is on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, Mark.
Hello. How are you this morning?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I was interested in your lady in 93. Right behind the flood, I left Lock and Dam number 1 at St. Paul, and I got off the river 3 months later at Pilot Town. It's 100 miles south of New Orleans, where the bar pilots pick up the ships.
So you basically made the same journey, but on the river.
On the river, yes. And I went from Sioux City to St. Louis on the Missouri. I went from Woodridge to almost Chicago on the Illinois, and I spent quite a bit of time on the Ohio from Cairo up to Pittsburgh on the river in a little 18-foot boat that I built out of sheeting-grade plywood. And when I was 63, I got my captain's license running tow boats out of Baton Rouge up on the Intercoastal Waterway and up the Red River to Shreveport. That's my experience.
Wow. Sounds like you had some amazing adventures.
Yes, and then I wrote a book about it, too. I think it would be very interesting to be able to talk to this lady sometime, because she spent her time on the bank. We call them banksiders. And she got it sounds like she got a real introduction into bankside people going down the river, where mine was river people.
Sure. Well, Mark, you know, Gail has a website, gailharper.com, where you can find out more about her. And I'm sure you can find a way to contact her and send her an email. But Gail, a lot of people make that journey down the river. I've interviewed a number of people who've canoed the river. I know people who've built rafts and made that journey down the river inspired by Huckleberry Finn. But why did you decide you wanted to be on the shore for your journey?
Well, for me, it was the perfect way to do it because I had the freedom to just wander wherever and meet people. And I, you know, as I said, people would just encourage me to go here. They'd invite me to a barbecue or a birthday party or a wedding or whatever. And so I was really able to kind of slide body and soul into the heritage and culture of that area. And I had the freedom to move around.
You know, the Mississippi River is something that captivates so many people. And I think it looms so large in this part of the country. When I moved to Michigan and I was talking to one of my coworkers about driving from Iowa to Michigan, and I said something about crossing the river, and he stopped me and he said, "What river?" I realized, you know, in Iowa, you don't have to say. And in Illinois, you don't have to say. In Wisconsin, you know, there is just the one. When you were visiting with people in Muscatine and in Davenport, did you also talk with them about the role that the river plays in their imaginations, in their minds?
I did. It was actually a favorite question of mine because I loved to hear the different ways that people would express it. And you know, people feel, and it's not actually just even people who live near the river. I hear this from people all over, people who, like myself, haven't lived near the river, but just feel a connection with it. But the people that I met on my journey, I would ask them, you know, what does it mean to you? How does it, do you spend it? how does it feel to be there? And the answers, you know, were in all different words, but there is something that resonates with the Mississippi River, and we feel it, and that's why we go and sit beside it, and there's sort of a harmonizing effect that it just seems to make everybody feel a little more open and a little more accepting of people.
As you traveled down the river, you visited some really wonderful places. I mentioned Muscatine. You visited Davenport. You also visited river towns that weren't in such great shape.
Yes. Sometimes you roll into a river town, and some of them have seen some hard times, and they might look a little dog-eared. And, you know, if you sort of let your judgment of that get in the way of your experience, you might miss out on some really wonderful things. But if you just kind of let yourself slide into life as it is and let it come to you in its own way, whatever it may be, there are always more stories to follow up on than I had time to do. And in fact, every time I left a community, and I, as I mentioned, I tried to stay two nights in each location, but every time virtually that I left a community, I had the feeling that, oh, I wish I had more time to spend here. It would be interesting to do this or to speak to this person.
I mentioned earlier how radically altered the river has been by the many people who have lived and worked on the river for so long. There are also some very serious environmental challenges facing the river and facing all of us. And Scott, that's something that you get to see firsthand. What are some of the main challenges that you see in your work on the Mississippi?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, I guess I did some back of the matchbook calculations, and if it is 90 days that it takes to go down the Mississippi River, a raindrop would spend about 13% of its time in Iowa border waters. Not very long time, but when you look at the river, and you know, that's one perspective of our type of job. We get to see the Mississippi in a long view. And, you know, when you look at the river, when it comes into New Albany, Iowa, you know, generally the river is very clear up there, really clean water. When the people at New Albany say the river is dirty, that is extremely different than when the people at Keokuk say the river's dirty. The river picks up a lot of sediment, and that's just one of its many challenges, the sedimentation rate. Of course, it's picking up a lot of volume, too, from various other rivers, such as the Wisconsin mentioned, and the Iowa and the Wassapinicon and all those rivers. But sedimentation is definitely an issue. It's affecting those beautiful backwaters we have and the biodiversity that we have out there. And I think, you know, the percent of the river that's behind levees really increases, as you probably discovered as you move down. You know, it's very little of the river on the upper Mississippi Wildlife Refuge is behind a levee. But once you get to Rock Island, Illinois, and Davenport in that area, and downstream, that percent increases a lot. So we kind of isolated away from the river in some ways when you get downstream, which is unfortunate and does create some environmental challenges.
What are some of the species that you see struggling because of the challenges facing the river?
Well, you know, fortunately we have most of our components of the species that were historically here. But you see things like, you know, our fish are doing, for the most part, pretty well. There are species that come and go and do poorly at times. But you see it in our freshwater mussels. They're kind of a species that we have about 30 species in the Mississippi River, incredibly diverse area. As you'll see with all faunal groups on the Mississippi, is a place to be. But they're struggling. And, you know, sedimentation's an issue, but there's also a lot of exotic animals that are unfortunately invading to the Mississippi River. And in the case of our freshwater mussels, you know, we have things like zebra mussels, which are native to Asia. Some of them exotic species. That's going to be a real challenge.
So invasive species.
Exactly. You know, and you see in our woodlands, there's a lot of invasive species coming along the Mississippi. Heck, you know, in our job, almost daily, we hear of a new species that has gotten loose. And, you know, when you get loose on the Mississippi River, you get loose to a river that's, you know, a little over 2,000 miles long.
Right. Gail, from your journey, did you spend much time thinking about the environmental impact of humans on the river?
Oh, yeah. It's impossible to avoid that, actually. As you travel south, it does go from a wild and scenic and pretty much pristine river, and it becomes increasingly altered and polluted and abused. And there is no way to avoid, feeling that and having an emotional reaction to that. And at the same time, I do have to say there is sort of an essence of the Mississippi, that the Mississippi is always the Mississippi, no matter how it looks on the surface. But as I traveled, I heard many, many different people from many different perspectives speak about the various problems of the river. And, of course, everybody sees it from their viewpoint and has their solution. And it's very clear to me that I'm not qualified to evaluate one against another solutions. But part of my hope for Road Trip with a Raindrop is just that it will bring more attention and more love to the river. And, if we love something, we're going to work harder to try and do whatever it is that's best for it.
How did this journey change you?
Probably the most basic change that I feel is that after spending 90 days of living without an agenda and just following the natural movement of life wherever it took me, it became obvious to me that really life is intended to be that easy, that as humans we really create a lot of stress for ourselves by thinking that we're in control of the universe and, sticking to our agenda and sort of not being open to whatever life is presenting to us. And so after spending 90 days of living that way, it became much easier for me to live my life at home that way.
I'm sure in having people read this book and look at your beautiful pictures, there are a lot of people who have said to you, oh, but you didn't go here and you didn't see this. Is there something along the river that you feel like you missed that you'll be back for?
I could easily do this journey 5 or 6 more times and see many, many things and learn many more things and meet many more wonderful people. And I have to say, I couldn't get it all in the book either. there were many experiences. We wouldn't be able to pick up the book if I got them all in there. But yes, it is. I felt that constantly, that there is so much more that could be learned here, and as we've heard from Scott and Brian, everybody, they each have their perspective and they know many things that I don't know, and I would love to learn all of that.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Gail Harper, author of Road Trip with a Raindrop, 90 Days Along the Mississippi. Also thank you to Scott Gritters and Brian Button of the Iowa DNR.